welcome to the only show you need to get you through this Tuesday. To get you through this crisis in a world where few things are reliable, we are reliable. You're listening to The Jason Rancher. We're live on AM 770 KTTH. We are streaming live on all those smart speakers like Amazon Echo, Google Home. We got a lot to get to. We only have 3 hours to do it. We're going to dive into the demise, the inevitable demise of CHOP. We're going to take you through a Supreme Court case that was a massive win for religious schools all across the country. Plus, cancel culture came after Dave Portnoy from Barstool Sports. The person who tried to cancel Dave, well, now he's trying to cancel the canceler. We're going to get into that and so much more. This hour of the Jason Rancho is brought to you by Alpine Specialty Cleaning. Lots of news is happening all around the world and right here at home. So, let's find out what's trending.
What's trending at home?
Today, officially, the cleanup began. The disbandment of the CHOP began. It only took two dead teenagers before the mayor finally moved. It only took instances of gun violence that injured four people for the mayor to move. It only took a blog post at KTTH.com pointing out that while everyone is claiming to support black lives, two black lives were taken at the CHOP. Earlier this morning, the city started to move some of the barricades on 10th. Not all of them, but some of them. The ones around the precinct are still there. This morning, the SPD worked with SDOT.
No, we're just working in mutual partnership. We've always been in assistance with SDOT in a lot of different functions. Friday, they tried to remove some of the barriers. They were met with a little bit of resistance. So today, we just were working in partnership for this.
But what about taking back the precinct? See, that's Assistant Police Chief Adrian Diaz. And he told Como, as of today, that's not happening.
So right now, that's not our discussion right now. Our focus is just trying to make sure the 10th and Pine is clear. And that's what we were able to accomplish so far. We removed the barriers, removed the side barriers, and this will at least open up some of the traffic for this area.
Now, I think it's clear that finally the mayor is moving. My expectation is that tomorrow morning, they're going to try to retake the precinct or at least try to move the barricades. My assumption is tomorrow morning it's going to happen. And then at 3 o'clock when we're here, 24 hours from now, we're going to be talking about the precinct getting put back in the hands of the people who actually own it. That's us, taxpayers in Seattle. We own it. Not a group of children who are playing dress-up at this point. Not a group of activists with fringe beliefs. We're the ones who share in the ownership of this land. And the truth of the matter is, as a result of taking over the precinct, what we've seen is an increase in crime. Not just the two homicides, not just the four acts of gun violence, but all of the other issues, like the attempted arson, like the vandalism. You've got some folks on the council, we'll jump into it a little bit later on in the show, but there's some council members like Lorena Gonzalez and Shama Sawant claiming we need to reject the claim that CHOP played any role whatsoever in the gun violence that we've seen. It is simply, quote unquote, gun violence to blame. Not CHOP-related gun violence, but just gun violence, kind of what we're seeing all across the country. It's a public health crisis. But keep something in mind, as Simone Del Rosario from Q13 tweeted out just about 2 hours ago. When you look up the actual crime data in that neighborhood, in all of 2019, this particular neighborhood of Capitol Hill saw two homicides. In all of 2019. In Capitol Hill, in just 10 days, there have been two homicides. Now, I suppose we can pretend that it has nothing to do with CHOP. Or we can be smart and reasonable and rational and honest and point out when you take police officers from an area and you literally abolish the police, which was what happened right now. It's what's happening right now at CHOP. It leads to violent situations. more and more people are coming out and saying you need to put an end to this. That this is nonsense, that this is lawlessness, that people's lives are literally being lost as a result. And finally, the city decided to act. And by the city, I mean Mayor Jenny Durkan, who this entire time was reluctant to act over politics. I believe that Mayor Durkan wanted to get this under control. I do believe that. I don't have that same view of Shama Sawan. I think she wants it to continue. But I do believe that Durkan wanted this to end. But she is in a politically tough spot, and she decided up until today to go the easy way. Teresa Mosqueda is running for mayor. She hasn't announced yet. Breaking news, we're breaking it. She's going to be running for mayor, as will other folks far to the left. And they are relying on the progressive activist base to give their campaign some momentum. Durkan, who's up for re-election, fears that challenge. She wants to make sure that the far left progressive activist base doesn't coalesce around one of her challengers. Because then from Durkin's perspective, she's like, well, I don't want a crazy leftist in power. I'm a moderate Democrat. She believes she's a moderate. She's not. But her position is, I don't want to make it easier for a fringe leftist to come in. So I'm not going to antagonize the protesters. But the fact of the matter is, if we had a fringe leftist mayor right now with this fringe leftist council, would anything be different than what it is right now? If Mayor Jenny Durkan is a moderate Democrat, are we getting moderate Democratic results as it relates to CHOP? No. And so finally, she decided to act. In face of the potential anger of a small group of fringe activists. Unfortunately, it took two dead kids for her to move. This could have been prevented. The 16-year-old kid who died yesterday didn't have to die. If CHOP wasn't there the way that it was, that 16-year-old kid would still be alive. Now, Colby, who's a protester at CHOP, he spoke to Cairo 7 TV defending the so-called security folks over at CHOP, who opened fire on not just that 16-year-old killing him, but that 14-year-old putting him initially in critical condition at Harborview. Now he's been upgraded, thankfully, to serious, but obviously serious is still serious.
We need to defend ourselves. We need to retaliate. We need to exercise our Second Amendment, right? Multiple gunshots were going off. We were panicking. Everyone was woken up early in the morning. We did take cover. We did take cover, and we defended ourselves.
You defended yourself. You panicked. You just heard him say panic. Now, I don't know if he means they and we in the literal sense, or if he's talking about CHOP as a whole. Did Colby decide to take up arms and, in his words, retaliate? Panicking and retaliating, that's what people do who are untrained. They panic. They retaliate. And that panic and that retaliation from these untrained so-called security folks killed a 16-year-old kid who, they're telling me apparently from that audio, it makes it sound like those kids in that car were shooting weapons. Maybe they were. We don't really know because the SPD not able to do an actual investigation. I have no clue if that 16 and 14-year-old posed a threat. Maybe they did. Maybe last week when we heard about the gang violence that cost the 19-year-old kid his life, maybe these two kids had some connection to gangs. I have no clue. We don't know because the panicked men playing dress up as security cleaned up the crime scene. Perhaps they were protecting themselves from suffering any sort of legal consequence for what the chief of police in Carmen Best called a murder. We don't know. But I can tell you that's not how trained police officers act. And I can tell you the system that we have set up, the system that these folks want to burn down to the ground and rebuild, well, that system had cops acted out the same way these pretend security members did. That system would have held them accountable. That system would have told us exactly what had happened, why it happened, and then you can actually punish anyone who, perhaps, acted out illegally. Can't do that right now, can we? That 16-year-old kid is dead. The 19-year-old kid, Lorenzo Anderson, from last weekend's gun violence, he's dead. Those are lives that are not lost in vain, I hope. I hope we take from that experience moving forward that we can't let something like this happen again, but those lives are lost forever. And they're lost forever because of the city's inaction, because of Mayor Jenny Durkan's inaction, because she was unwilling to lead. She was playing politics. She was too scared of getting challenged from the left. And all of a sudden, now she's doing something. If you did that 2 weeks ago, I believe two teenagers would still be alive today. But the city didn't just step back. In a lot of ways, they really enabled what happened. You saw the city bringing in toilets for the protesters, bringing in crew members to clean up the parks, trim the hedges of bushes, clean up the litter. This was enabled. And under that reality, in which they made it so much easier for these people to stay at CHOP illegally occupying the lane, illegally occupying the space and the park and the precinct, during this so-called summer of love that Mayor Jenny Durkan, again, politically called out the president, Seattle's fine. Why are you so scared of democracy? Well, there's a 16-year-old kid who's probably scared of this level of quote-unquote democracy when he was shot to death. Same for 19-year-old Lorenzo, whose father, Horace, was at CHOP today, shining a light on what happened to his son.
I ain't been sleeping. You see my eyes, I've been crying. I'm trying not to cry on TV. You know, this doesn't look like a protest to me no more. That looks like they just took over and said, we can take over whenever we want to.
It was a protest for about a day. You saw the frivolity meets the street activism, the street fair meeting a social justice commune. You saw that for about a day. And then it changed. Then it became incredibly dangerous, which should come as no shock to anyone because the whole idea of CHOP was born out of violence. And it spiraled out of control every single day as some folks in the media, mostly national, mostly at CNN and the Daily Beast, pretending that there was no violence. It's peaceful. It's all good. Although when I was on the ground, when Julio Rosas from Town Hall was on the ground with me, when Shelby Talcott from the Daily Caller was there with us, we didn't see just nonstop peace. We saw a lot of violence, lots of fighting. Fighting that then turned into vandalism, which then turned into arson, which then turned into threats of violence, which then ended with lots of gunfire impacting lots of people, all African Americans. And so Horace, this father who lost his son, who will never get to see his son again because of the quote-unquote peaceful activism, the summer of love, he says break it up.
They should have deployed him here and said, man, hey, it's time to go. It's time to move on and break this up.
Deploy who? The National Guard, he tells Cairo 7 TV. Now, of course, when you're looking at the folks who are still there at CHOP and refusing to go, what was kind of funny as they removed the concrete barriers this morning, the protesters then moved their couch. They broke up the Conversation Cafe, producer Peyton. The Conversation Cafe was a collection of some used couches where people would collect, mostly white people, to talk through their activism and shame each other for having white privilege. It was actually quite interesting to overhear some of these conversations. They broke that up.
So where are we supposed to go now to have a conversation? If there's no conversation corner, I don't know where I can converse.
We've lost a lot here in Seattle. This was the only place left. Now the only place you have to have a conversation, and to be fair, this is the best place to have deep conversations of nuance and meaning, Twitter.
That is the best.
So they moved the couches and they set up their new soft barriers, because they can't have the concrete barriers there anymore. So now they've moved the couches, because that'll keep people out. Now, they're not going to listen to Horace, a man who lost his son, a black life that was supposed to matter, but apparently didn't matter enough to the protesters to shut this place down because they didn't, and then another black life was lost. They're not going to listen to Horace. They're not going to listen to Andre Taylor, another community activist who's saying we need to shut this place down. They're not going to listen because this isn't truly about Black Lives Mattering. Not anymore, and not with the people who remain. This is about a political ideology. Now, they may say the political ideology is all about protecting black lives, but that certainly didn't help Lorenzo Anderson. It certainly didn't help the 14-year-old kid who right now is clinging to life in a hospital after being shot. And it obviously didn't help the 16-year-old who was murdered. Again, the word used by Chief Carmen Best. Didn't help their lives to matter. This is about political ideology. Ideologues are there. Hardcore fringe ideologues. Dangerous ones. They want to abolish the police. They want to end prisons. You don't even have to imagine what would happen. What kind of chaos would ensue in a society like that. Because all you have to do is literally look at CHOP. CHOP is the best example of what would happen when you abolish the police. The quote-unquote security that they set up in the form of various activists, including the John Brown Gun Club, which is a militant Antifa group that practices quote-unquote active resistance. They set up and they quickly used deadly force, didn't they? 10 days, 2 homicides. That's deadly force. The very thing they'll protest cops for engaging in. Just about, what, 6 weeks, 7 weeks, 8 weeks ago, we had the incident in Lower Queen Anne where a man with a kitchen knife tried to stab police officers who ended up using deadly force against him. There was an outcry there, wasn't it? There was an outcry. That happened just before the George Floyd murder. And people were saying this is police brutality. I remember the King County NAACP head. She said something along, here we go again. This is another white officer killing a black man. And there was lots of anger. Did you see any of the anger coming from the King County NAACP on this? On what was most likely, again, if it's the Antifa goons who were in charge here, white dudes with guns killing two black people, two black teenagers. Didn't really hear a whole lot of anger.
Didn't hear a peep.
I didn't get the press release. Now, maybe they sent it and maybe I just didn't get it. I'm not on the top of their list of people to send press releases to. But I kind of feel like I would have seen something, heard something. Not really. I guess when the security over at CHOP is engaged in deadly force, you offer them more deference. Look at how this security force, again, in a world where cops don't exist, cops aren't allowed to exist, look how they treated that alleged arsonist Richard Hanks. 21-year-old kid, according to a police report, is alleged to have tried to burn down the car tender automobile business that borders about a block and a half block away from CHOP. He tried to burn it down. The business owners find the dude, put out the fire, call 911 between, according to the Sun, Mason McDermott, between 15 and 18 times. Cops don't show up. Cops refuse to show up because of the policy of not going in to the CHOP. But the people who did show up as this was happening, between 100 and 200 of them, again, according to the police report, a bunch of CHOP protesters demanding, under threat of violence, that the business owners hand over the suspect. If they don't, they'll be the ones burning the business to the ground. They vandalized the business. They broke the chain link fence. The mob descended upon the business. The business owners turned over the suspect. Well, their form of policing involved interrogation, detainment, and then physical assault, according to the police report. They assaulted him multiple times, and then a fight broke out in which the suspect got away, only to be rearrested less than 24 hours later in White Center by King County Sheriff's deputies. What was he doing? Allegedly stealing a car. That's the policing that exists in a world in which we abolish the professional police department. All of this should scare the hell out of you. Heck, sorry. I'm sorry. Don't give me that look.
Clean it up, man.
I'm sorry.
Come on.
It should scare you greatly. How about that?
That's good. Our G-rated audience can
hear
that.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to.
We are a family-friendly show, Jason.
Okay, push the button.
What's trending in the classroom?
So there was a major victory coming out of the Supreme Court today, thanks to Chief Justice John Roberts, the Republican appointee that Republicans didn't like yesterday because of his ruling on abortion, but today probably like because of his ruling on a case out of Montana. This was a victory for religiously affiliated schools. It's based on a case that came out of Montana where the state essentially created a program for scholarships to go to students at private schools. However, under the rules, if you went to a private religious school, you wouldn't end up getting the money. And so it was challenged in court. It made its way to the Supreme Court, and they ruled 5-4 along party lines that it violates the First Amendment because it essentially discriminates on the basis of religion. Now, Chief Justice Roberts, writing for the majority, said a state need not subsidize private education, but once a state decides to do so, it cannot disqualify some private schools solely because they are religious. This, of course, makes total sense. I am alarmed that there are four justices on the Supreme Court that disagreed. In my experience, as someone who, did you know that when I was in college and I was studying politics and I had to do my thesis, was on this very topic, the Establishment Clause, specifically secularism within the Supreme Court.
Did they ask you for your opinion before they made this ruling?
Not in this case, but I am willing to bet that they read that thesis, which was 77 pages long, something I'm quite proud of. Because had they read that, had they listened to me, they would have come, they did come to that conclusion. People seem to think that the Establishment Clause means that the government, under no circumstances, could be involved in anything religious. Separation of church and state, you've heard that. But that's not what the Establishment Clause is about. The Establishment Clause is about protecting religion from government. The government cannot adopt one particular religion over another. It cannot show preference to one religion over another, but it can get involved in something that is either directly or indirectly religious. Do the research and you'll figure that out. Justice Sotomayor. I don't know why I picked her. I mean, that was the first one. I mean, I could have gone with Kagan, Sue. I mean, there's so many.
Could have gone with any of them.
Well, four of them. I couldn't go with the five that voted in favor of.
Could have gone with any of the four.
But I'm acknowledging that. I'm just.
So why don't you just name them all?
Souter, Sotomayor, Kagan, and Ginsburg. All of them. How about that? Okay, now you can't accuse me of just picking on the one.
Good job.
You're listening to the Jason Rant Show. Text the keyword RANTS, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-8770. I'll send you my latest blog that I think resulted in CHOP being cleaned up. I'm just taking credit for all sorts of stuff. Text RANTZ to 1-800-465-8770. Cancel culture. Kind of going after now the canceler. We're going to get into that story when we return on the Jason Rant Show. Welcome back to the Jason Rant Show. We are live on this Tuesday afternoon. Thank you so much for tuning in. I'll be on Tucker Carlson later tonight, then Fox and Friends later tomorrow, as well as Neil Cavuto show tomorrow, all doing updates on CHOP. If you want to follow along, watch the video, you can hit me up on Twitter at twitter.com/JasonRants. Just give me a like, give me a follow. You will see all the video once it's available. I post everything whenever it happens. That makes it so much more. It's almost like watching me on demand, except via Twitter, and the demand content is usually only 4 minutes. Barstool Sports. Producer Peyton knows a lot about this. I've always sort of known it as a Maxim Magazine meets ESPN kind of video vibe. It's a website. How would you describe it?
Barstool Sports is ESPN for frat kids.
ESPN for frat boys. The kinds who wear Sperry shoes and pastel shorts, as producer Peyton likes to say, which is just weird because he's saying it all the time. He's just wandering around saying it.
That's all I say, ever.
Well, Barstool Sports, I suppose, should come as no shock to anyone who's familiar with their brand of racy, very politically incorrect humor. They are now coming under fire for past content. The cancel culture is coming for Dave Portnoy. He's their CEO. And the person who is pushing the cancel culture is Jemeil Hill, who is the worst. She is a former reporter for ESPN who was pushed out because she kept calling the president racist. She became a hero on the left because they saw her as a victim. They saw her as the martyr, giving up a career so she could tell the truth about the president. She now works at The Atlantic, putting out very lazy pieces. Poorly argued, blah, all on a website. Well, she got into it with Portnoy this week. And I'm wondering, just wondering, if she's regretting going up against Portnoy. Now, the commentary that she pulled from the days of then 49ers quarterback Colin Kaepernick taking a knee, there's no doubt that the content, the video, that Portnoy and a couple of other Barstool sports folks participated in, there is no doubt it is offensive. It is very, very offensive. And on Twitter, Hill wrote, "This is terrible, but then again, consider the source." Now, there was no real reason for Jemeil Hill to post this. No one was talking about this video specifically, or even David Portnoy, in any meaningful way. But she posted the video in which they refer to Colin Kaepernick as an ISIS guy, saying he looks Arabic, and just generally pretty offensive stuff.
Colin Kaepernick not standing for the national anthem has become a huge story. So I'm going to say something that's racist, but I don't think...
I mean, at least he did acknowledge what he's about to say. It's almost like a trigger warning.
It doesn't make it any better you preface it.
Yeah, it doesn't. It just... I suppose it just... You're waiting for it. The only thing that could happen as a result of something like that, a warning like that, is the person says, "Oh, well, it wasn't that racist. It wasn't that sexist. It wasn't that homophobic." That's the only thing. But you're still acknowledging that there were parts of it that were racist or sexist or homophobic. So let's listen.
It's racist. I don't think if you think something and don't say or act upon it, you can be called a racist.
But you're going to say it.
When I heard this story, I didn't read it. I didn't know why he was saying there. I was like, "Oh, he's an ISIS guy." Like, that was my original thought.
Which I don't even understand. I don't even understand that.
Because he kind of looks like...
He is very confusing. He is very confusing. I will give you that.
You thought he was not standing for the national anthem because he wanted to, like, kill all Americans?
No, I thought he maybe had some terrorist Arabic.
Okay. So, yes, can we all agree that that's certainly not, one, it's just not funny. It's just
horribly
lazy
racist
humor. Yes, it's racist. But in his defense, he would say it was just all a joke. And I'm not familiar with this brand much beyond what I've heard. Is it appropriate to say this is the kind of humor, in air quotes, that you would find at Barstool Sports?
This is. You don't go in there if you're going to be easily offended.
You're not going in there for some high-end sports analysis. This is what they do. So Jemeil Hill tweets out that video, which was essentially to call him out and to try to get the cancel culture to jump on him. But it turns out Jemeil Hill has some equally offensive tweets that are on her account still. Back in 2009, she was talking about Manny Ramirez. Manny Ramirez was he's an MLB player. He was in the middle of a doping scandal where he apparently used a female fertility drug as a steroid. And in her tweet, she used an offensive comment, an offensive name that was used at the time and certainly used before then for transgender people. She said, apologies for language, "My Facebook friends are calling him Manny the Tranny." So inappropriate and hilarious. So she knew she was using language that would be deemed inappropriate, but she did it anyway. Which kind of sounds like what Portnoy did, which was acknowledge the statement he is about to make, the joke commentary he's about to make is racist, but he did it anyway because he thought it was going to be funny. So there's little difference between the conduct. And so then people went after Jemeil Hill, the canceller in this case, to be canceled herself. Now, of course, she'll get a pass because she is a progressive. Portnoy doesn't get a pass because he's a straight white dude who comes off like a privileged frat boy who I'm presuming people would assume he's more conservative than he is liberal. That's my guess. I have no way. He's certainly not a progressive from the standpoint of the content that comes out of his mouth.
He's a colleague of yours. He goes on Fox News with Tucker Carlson.
He went on one time.
No, he literally...
So does he do all the time?
You were on last week, and Portnoy was the hit after you. And when I told my roommates that, they were very hyped because they like Dave Portnoy.
For me, oh.
They like Portnoy a lot.
They weren't hyped.
And they said, wow, Jason Rantz and Dave Portnoy were on the same show? Okay. That's impressive.
Well, Jameel Hill is getting a pass, and she wrote on Twitter, let me address this. I saw some folks circulating this tweet from 2009 in my timeline after I criticized Portnoy for a racist skit that went viral yesterday. Which, by the way, she's doing exactly what people are doing to her. Right? She did to Portnoy exactly what folks were doing to her. Let me explain why I kept this tweet up when it was brought to my attention. For context, the tweet was in reference to Manny Ramirez, blah, blah, blah. It was wholly ignorant, dumb, and offensive. I'm ashamed that I was so uneducated about trans issues at the time. I stand with this community firmly today. People don't give conservatives a lot of slack when it comes to content from their background, which is why Portnoy came out so strongly to defend himself.
Okay, emergency press conference time. Well, it took them long enough. Cancel culture finally coming after Barstool. I mean, they've come after what? Jimmy Kimmel, Joe Rogan, Bill Simmons. Now it's our turn. You knew what was going to happen. To be honest, they've been coming after me for 17 f***ing years. People want to get rid of us. And here's the thing.
He even talks like a frat boy that you wouldn't want to be friends with.
He does, and he's like 43. He just can't let it go.
I've been doing this for 2 decades. Uh-huh. I've made fun of every group of people, every race, every creed, every culture. You name it, we've made jokes about it. So if the No Fun Club, if the cancel culture wants to go back blog by blog, video by video, day by day, week by week, month by month, year by year,
okay, we got
decade by decade, and call through everything we've ever f***ing said and done, yeah, you're going to find a few jokes that miss the mark.
I feel like you're going to find a lot with him. But I generally agree with his position. You should not be judging content from any year other than the year in which you're using the new societal view of the content. And maybe not year for year, but if you're going by today's contemporary woke standards, which has started to develop in a more meaningful and clear way starting in, what, 2015, 2016? You can't use those standards to judge content from even a few years earlier, from 2015 or 1997, or, to defend Jameel Hill, 1999. I just think it's wrong. I think it's absolutely wrong. Now, it doesn't mean that you are not going to be judged for the old content, because it is going to go into how people view you. It informs the way they look at you. But the whole idea of a cancel culture for stuff that was done in jest, even if it was offensive at the time, just doesn't seem appropriate to me. Imagine the power to censor in the hands of your worst enemy. So imagine the power to cancel in the hands of your worst enemy. Conservatives shouldn't want to go down that pathway. I know the leftists want to. I think it's wrong. But it is rather instructive to realize that they don't have to follow their own rules. And Jameel Hill will suffer no consequences as a result. You're listening to The Jason Rantz Show, 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text message. When we come back, an initiative sponsor is mad with Secretary of State Kim Wyman for a rather ridiculous reason. We're going to get into that when we return on The Jason Rantz Show. Welcome back to The Jason Rantz Show. Thank you so much for tuning in. I really do appreciate it. A group led by a dude of questionable judgment, in my opinion, wants to qualify an initiative using electronic signatures rather than quote-unquote wet signatures, a literal signature that's handwritten. But the Secretary of State, Kim Wyman, is all like, whoa, 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 no, you can't do that, not under our rules. So now she faces meaningless, politically driven calls to resign. Jesse Weinberry is a former state representative. He's the co-chair of the campaign for Initiative 1776, which is the Washington Anti-Discrimination Act, which I believe is the same one the voters already said no to. So he's going online trying to get people to sign the initiative petition.
We put public health first, and that's still no reason for us to be saddled with a wet signature rule that doesn't exist in the law.
So Secretary of State Kim Wyman says her office will not accept electronic signatures. They'll only accept wet signatures, handwritten, ink signatures on paper. Weinberg tells our sister station, Kyle Radio, he's not happy.
There is no wet signature test, and voters should not be told that their signature has to pass a wet signature test in order for them to sign a petition when that is not the law.
Got it. So what he's demanding is that Wyman issue a statement that says exactly what he said in that clip. And if she chooses not to, oh, well, guess what? He's going to call on her to resign. Step down, Wyman.
We're averaging somewhere around 200 signatures an hour online. And that's not the case anymore since the communications from the Secretary of State's office.
Got it. Now, I don't know if Kim Wyman sent out a big statement to Weinberry. I know all we had to do was email them and get a statement.
Yeah, that wasn't hard.
It wasn't hard at all. She's going to be on the show tomorrow to talk us through this, but she said, as with all initiative and referendum sponsors who reach out to our office inquiring about signature gathering processes, we provide guidance based on previous signature gathering experiences. Washington has a century-old practice of receiving handwritten signatures that the voter provided on a physical sheet of paper or, quote-unquote, wet signatures. We inform the sponsors of this decades-long experience and encourage sponsors to obtain signatures in line with past experience. Until petitions are submitted and we have time to review, we can't speculate on whether the signatures submitted are valid. Above all else, our mission is to maintain the integrity of the process and to ensure voters' rights to initiative and referenda are not impeded. Now, I looked at this, and to me, it seems very simple as to why we would not allow, quote-unquote, electronic signatures. The integrity of the whole process. For example, I know producer Peyton's address. I know his home address. It's on file here. I have access to it. I also know what his email address is. I have all that information. So can I just go online and sign his name to this and put his address and just digitally sign by just typing in his name?
Have you done that before?
I'm not going to confirm or deny that under counsel from my attorney. However, if I were to do that, how would the Secretary of State's office know whether or not Peyton actually signed it? Because usually when we're talking about ballots, for example, we compare the ballot to the signature that's on file. This just seems a little bit tenuous to me. Now, you could say the same thing, I suppose, of someone physically signing a wet signature that looks a lot like Peyton's signature, because maybe I would know that as well. But I just, it's very clearly easier to do this kind of fraud online. And don't tell me that it can't get done. Don't tell me that you can't go and get physical signatures, because Referendum 90, which is pushing against this ridiculous sex education bill that the state legislature passed, they almost, I think, doubled almost. Maybe it was exactly double. I can't remember the number, but they got more than enough physical signatures that they needed. How'd they do that? Oh, every single person who did that put their life on the line, potentially getting the coronavirus. If that's the rules that they had to abide by, then these are the rules that the Weinberry folks need to abide by. Now, if in the future you've come up with a way that makes it an easier and more secure process for online signatures for initiatives, count me in. If you can come up with a process that works and is safe, I'll do that. Because the one thing I can't stand are the people who are paid professional signature gatherers who are just like, you want to sign? And I always have to come up with a lie on the spot because I never want to get into an argument with them. So now my new lie is, oh no, I already signed it.
Just don't lie then.
No, they give you a look.
Have integrity.
No, I have none. I don't want it now. If I have went 38 years without it, I don't want to start now. They judge you when you say, if, for example, I was in Wallingford and I was going into a QFC. On the way in, I saw a bunch of signs with my name on it calling me a homophobic slur. So I took some of those down. I go in and there's a socialist alternative dude there having some sort of petition for taxing Amazon. Now, Saturday morning, it was about 11:45, maybe a little bit earlier than that. I could go into the QFC, go about my day, enjoy my day as best as I can because I'm not a very enjoyable person. Or I can tell that dude, no, I don't agree. And he goes, why? Because I think it's stupid and I'm a conservative who's pro-business. And then have them say, oh, are you that little beep boy that we put on the little sign? And then they'll know, and then it'll just be a big fight, and it's going to ruin my day.
Maybe you should teach people how to have civil conversations about disagreeing on things.
Yeah, good luck doing that with Socialist Alternative. Good luck. Yeah, the Shama Salwan group, they're really known for having honest, clean, nice conversations, reasonable conversations.
Next time you see some people out looking for signatures, have a conversation with them,
Jason. I don't want to have a conversation with anybody. I literally said, oh, no, I already signed it. Thank God they didn't say where. Today's the first day we're out. Then I would have been, oh, really? I signed so many of these things. Go someone. And then I was actually then thinking as I went in, I should have just put a fake signature on there and a fake address and then had them think that the signature is legit and then have it get rejected. And the breaking news, by one vote, by one signature, it failed.
That'd be you.
That would be totally me. It's a Jason Rant Show.